Thank you, Bonnie. Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow at the Middle East Forum and All-Service Chair. Today, we're honored to welcome Professor Eitan Gilboa, who will be addressing us from Israel. He'll be offering his analysis of the upcoming Israeli elections and U.S. relations. Professor Gilboa is Director of the Center for International Communication at Bar-Ilan University and a Senior Research Associate at its Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. He received his MA and PhD degrees from Harvard University and has been a visiting professor in leading American and European universities. Professor Gilboa has published several books and numerous articles on U.S.-Israeli relations, international communication, and public diplomacy. Professor Gilboa?
Yes. Good evening.
Please go ahead.
I'll be speaking for about 15 minutes. And while I'm speaking, you can write questions, which I will be happy to answer at the end of my initial presentation. My first comment is that nobody really wants these elections. People have gotten tired of going to elections too frequently, almost every 2 years. They see no reason for having these elections at this time. Many believe that this is just the result of a personal whim of the Prime Minister, and it will cost about 2 billion shekels, which is about $500 million. Nobody knows, including myself, where these elections will go. Many make speculations, including myself. So what I'll be talking about in the next 10-plus minutes are mostly speculations. Public opinion polls and surveys are taken in Israel almost on a daily basis, but we know that things develop in many unexpected ways. We have three more months of intensive campaigning, and many events could happen. As of today, 30% of the eligible voters don't know whom to vote for. We call it the floating vote. Candidates make mistakes, and if they are serious enough, they could divert the trends in the opposite direction. Resolutions at the UN could affect the elections. Today, for example, there were two major events in Europe which could again influence the vote here. The High Court of Justice removed Hamas from the list of terrorist organizations, and the European Parliament voted to recognize a Palestinian state, providing it comes out of negotiations. But these kind of resolutions could influence the campaign. And also, some people here think that Obama will intervene and will return for the intervention of Netanyahu in the 2012 presidential elections. The polls do reveal disappointment with center parties. Before, say 10 years ago or so, much of the voting was for the two big parties, Labor on the left and Likud on the right. People became very disappointed with the two big parties and began to vote for third center parties like Shinui, the retiree party, and in the last elections for Yesh Atid. Turns out that now people are disappointed also with the center parties, which apparently do not deliver on their campaign promises. The two big parties today, both Likud and Labor, are playing on that and are calling on voters to vote either for one of them, but not for a third party. In these elections, Prime Minister Netanyahu became highly vulnerable. He is opposed in his own party. Two leaders of his party left, Moshe Kahlon, a social minister, a star minister, left almost 2.5 years ago, before even the last elections. Recently, another star minister, Gideon Saar, also left. Both felt that Netanyahu is not giving them enough influence in policy making, and therefore decided to leave. The Likud party has been moving, so to speak, too much to the right. Members of Knesset, such as Danny Danon and Feiglin, have been opposing Netanyahu on many issues, both party matters as well as national issues. Netanyahu has been able to present himself as Mr. Security, but the summer Gaza war exposed him to accusations of not living up to his promises and commitment to destroy Hamas if another war in Gaza erupted. The economic situation today is problematic. Netanyahu is trying to blame the outgoing Minister of Finance, Yair Lapid, who served as the Minister of Finance on behalf of the center party Yesh Atid, but it does not work, and people are holding Netanyahu responsible for the economic problems. In this election, every party, almost every party, both on the right, center, and left, will attack Netanyahu. The acronym for the campaign, for this campaign, is ABB, anybody but Netanyahu, ABN, ABN, anybody but Bibi, or anybody but Netanyahu. And so this is going to erode his support with voters. And finally, I detect some fatigue with Netanyahu, because people feel that he has been too long in power and that perhaps there is now time to have a new prime minister. Based on all these observations, I believe, and I felt that from the beginning, that he made a huge mistake by dismantling his coalition and calling for the early elections. Another major characteristic of these elections is unifications. Usually, when two parties merge for a particular election, they get less seats in the parliament than they would have gotten had they run independently. And in the last elections, Likud merged with Israel Beiteinu on the right, with Lieberman, and in fact got less seats than they would have gotten had they run separately. The merger is needed, or was needed last time, so that Netanyahu could come up with more seats than any other candidate to the position of prime minister, and it's important who has the greatest number of seats, the largest number of seats, because the custom is that the president of Israel calls on the head of the biggest party to form a coalition government. So what we see this time is a merger that had been already achieved between Labor and Hatnoa, Herzog, Yitzhak Herzog and Tzipi Livni got together, and the polls show that they will get, as of now, they will get many more seats that they have right now. And but I still think that Herzog made a mistake by agreeing to rotate with Tzipi Livni, which means that if he is able to form the next coalition, he would serve for the first 2 years and Livni for the next 2 years. The feeling is that he did not negotiate well the agreement with Livni, and that perhaps he didn't have enough confidence that he could himself win enough seats to come on top and be asked by the president to form the next government. There are all kinds of talks about other unifications, possible unifications, for example, between Likud and Beit HaYehudi on the right, and also at the center, Yesh Atid, which in the polls are being reduced from 19 seats in the present parliament to just about 10. So Yesh Atid is seeking cooperation or even a merger with a new party established by a former Likud leader, Moshe Kahlon, who in the polls right now gets about 10 to 12 seats. And there were some talks between the two leaders of the two centrist parties, and some polls were taken showing that if they merge, they will be the largest party. A poll released today by the newspaper Haaretz is quite interesting. It shows Likud with 21, Labor and Hatnoa, Herzog and Tzipi Livni, 21, and Yair Lapid, Yesh Atid, plus Kahlon and Kulanu, together they get 24, and so they could become the bigger party, and therefore representative of this alliance, if it will be established, could become a serious candidate to the position of prime minister. The last characteristic that I want to talk about is issues. Usually in elections in Israel, there are two major issues. One is always national security, and the second is always social and economic problems. In the last elections, the emphasis was on social and economic problems because they came after huge social protests against the cost of living and economic poor conditions. It's not clear where this election is heading in terms of issues, and it seems that at least the opposition will try to focus on social and economic issues, but they will also hit at Netanyahu's vulnerability in security and foreign policy, as I mentioned earlier, and they are likely also to criticize him for the bad relations he has had with Barack Obama. Questions, please.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to, the question and answer period will now begin, and we invite your participation. Please note that when there are no questions in the queue, the moderator will ask a question. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to identify yourself when your line has been unmuted, please do so. Please remember, if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you're selected to ask your question. Again, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Okay, so we do have a number of questions. Marilyn, would you like me to go ahead and queue them up?
Yes, and I am going to ask the first question, if I may. And yes, Professor Gilboa, one possible reason for the Obama administration's consideration of sanctions against Israel for its settlement policy is to send a message to the Europeans to keep up their economic pressure in Israel via its active BDS movement. Given the spike in terror attacks in Jerusalem, it would seem that Israelis would want to stay with the leader they know is uncompromising on their security. How much impact do you believe the Obama pressure tactic is likely to have on Israeli voters, or will it only increase their commitment to Netanyahu?
I have just written an op-ed article about this issue. There have been American attempts of intervention in Israeli elections in previous years. The most glaring one was in 1996, when President Clinton came here and organized a major conference of support in Shimon Peres, and we know that it didn't work, and in perhaps even backfired. So I'm arguing that any attempt to intervene, and maybe some people in the White House think that they could retaliate against what they perceive to be Netanyahu's intervention in the 2012 presidential elections and support the opposition here. But I think that if they do it, it would backfire, because Netanyahu would be able to say, oh, the United States is now intervening. They want Herzog and Tzipi Livni to become the prime ministers of Israel, because they would more accommodate the American pressure and would make concessions to the Palestinians in negotiations. And no people, I think, like to see an outside force intervening in elections and divert them in favor of a particular party or a particular ideology. I don't know if the Obama people know all of that, and if they know, if they could overcome this urge to embarrass Netanyahu. But I'm almost certain that any intervention would lead to the opposite results and would help Netanyahu to win these elections.
Thank you. Okay, Bonnie, could you please instruct our callers and take the next call?
Yes. So we'll take the next question now. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear that your line is unmuted.
Hello, Nina Rosenwald. I was wondering if the Israel as a nation state is still a topic that people care about.
I didn't hear the question.
I'm sorry.
Can the moderator repeat the question?
There was a big brouhaha about Israel should be a state for the Jewish people, and is that still an issue, or did that blow over?
Okay. The opposition is trying to make a big issue out of it, saying that this law of declaring or establishing Israel as a democratic and a Jewish state moves Israel too much to the right, or maybe even to racism. I think that most of the people, most of the voters, don't buy that. We can easily show that such a law or a similar law exists in most European countries, maybe in many countries and many other countries in the world. So I think that if the opposition were to use this, I think it's not going to bring them much support.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And we'll go to our next question. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear that your line is unmuted.
Yes, this is Larry Holland calling. Professor, I was interested in your comments in regard to, the Iranian nuclear situation and how you feel that what positions or actions Israel will be taking, and if there's any, do you see anything happening to be constructive from the U.S. end, or is the entire negotiation appear to be somewhat of a farce?
First of all, I don't think that the Iranian nuclear issue is going to occupy a central place in this election. The tendency in Israel is to think that the United States is too eager to sign a nuclear agreement with Iran, that Iran knows it. Iran is saying that it cooperates with the United States in the war against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, and therefore should the United States should in return make concessions on the nuclear issue. My argument is that that the Islamic State is such a big enemy of Iran that it does not have to receive any concessions in return for fighting that terrorist organization. The feeling in Israel has been for a long time that the United States would be satisfied with an agreement that would allow Iran to become what we call in professional terms a threshold nuclear state, which means the ability to assemble a bomb in a very short period of time. The feeling is that the agreement with Iran the United States and some European countries are talking about would not be tough enough, would not place significant controls in Iran itself. And you cannot believe Iran on anything because they have a record of 10 years of cheating and lying about the nuclear program. President Obama said that the United States is committed not to allow Iran to become a nuclear power. Obama also said that no agreement is better than a bad agreement, but in Israel and also in the Middle East, other American allies, Arab allies, don't really believe these commitments. They think that the United States would not make the necessary effort to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear power. For Israel, this is a major challenge because the combination of extreme ideology, the one that rules Iran today, and weapons of mass destruction is a deadly formula, a deadly mixture. I don't think, though, that Israel has a military option. I think only the United States has a military option, and therefore, if a bad agreement is signed with Iran, Israel will have to develop capabilities to deal with the status of Iran, the new status of Iran, as a threshold nuclear state.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to our next caller. If you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear that your line is unmuted.
Go ahead with your question, caller. And please be sure that your line is unmuted. Okay, so we're going to have to go to the next caller.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. This is Herschel Elias in Philadelphia. I have a question. I've been reading about the Yachad and Shaz, Derry for Shaz, and Yishai, I think, has left Shaz and formed his own party. So I was wondering what relevance Shaz and Yachad have. And I read these from the internet, not the most accurate things. Some consider Shaz a right-wing party. Some consider a left-wing party. I get all these conflicting email accounts. So I was wondering, for the two parties, Shaz and Yachad, what they actually stand for and where they are politically. Are they right-wing? Are they left-wing? Are they religious and tend to be right-wing? I just don't know. I can't put my finger on it right now.
You're not the only one. I think in Shaz, it's all personal. Derry cannot work anymore with Yishai, and really humiliated him. Yishai asked for certain conditions, and Derry showed him the door outside. So Yishai decided to form his own party. It's not yet clear where he will be heading. There are all kinds of options. But I can tell you that when Yishai is saying that Arya Derry is left and he is right, that this is a little bit misleading. I think he uses it to justify his departure from the party. This is a big blow to Shaz. The poll that I cited earlier and released today by Haaretz shows that Derry will get 4 seats in the Knesset and that Eli Yishai will get about 3. Now, I need to say that the threshold for winning seats in Israel today is 3.5% of the votes, which means you have to have at least 4 members, 4 seats, to get in. So Yishai is not getting in today into the Knesset, according to this poll. And also Derry is hardly getting in, which means that if they fight each other, which would be the case, that perhaps Shaz could be completely eliminated from representation in the next Knesset.
Okay,
thank you. And we'll take our next caller. And if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Jerry Stern calling from Lower Merion. Professor Gilboa, I have a follow-up question to the one that was just asked. You mentioned that Shaz would be borderline in terms of getting into the coalition or getting into the Knesset because of the number of votes. However, there are other Haredi parties that are running in the election. Would any of those be able to meet the threshold and qualify? And if so, would it be possible for Netanyahu to piece together a working coalition with a combination of Bayit Yehudi, Haredi parties, and other centrist or right-leaning parties?
Okay. Yes. The other Ashkenazi Haredi parties are not affected by the crisis in Shaz. They may get some of the seats that Shaz will be losing. It's not clear yet if this is going to happen. It seems that Shaz is losing seats to Likud, Bayit Yehudi, and maybe even even Israel Beitenu of Lieberman. Well, Netanyahu, I think this is his plan. He wants to establish a coalition with Beit HaYehudi and the Haredi parties, as well as with Shas. But I don't know what will happen with Shas. In any event, if you count the seats by the seats that the polls today give to each party, he will still need a centrist party. And he could bring in Lieberman or Kahlon, because Kahlon is saying all the time, I am the real Likud. The Likud that is running now is not my Likud. I am the Likud of Begin. I am the Likud of compromises. I am the Likud of the social solutions to problems. And so Kahlon could go both ways. So Netanyahu is in a better position right now to form a coalition, but he still needs a centrist party. On the other hand, the combination, the alliance between Labor and Tnua, Tzipi and Herzog, if they are able to win for their side, the centrist parties, they and Herzog has very good relations with the Haredi parties, unlike Yair Lapid, for example. And so Herzog can, I think, under certain conditions, take the Haredi into his own camp. So I think that in this election we will see a fierce battle. First of all, on getting almost every possible vote of your relevant camp, and in addition, each block will hope that it will be able to bring in the Haredi parties and the centrist parties. This is why, according to the situation today and the polls released in the last few days, it seems that the two blocks would have like almost an equal chance to form a coalition. And so the key is which leader, which party would receive most of the seats, because that leader will have an advantage over everybody else. He would be able to offer all kinds of conditions. He would be able to meet conditions made by other parties, other candidates to join his coalition. And the president is likely to ask that person to form a coalition government. So each bloc now is trying each party, each of the big parties at least, are trying to get on top in terms of the number of seats. This has led to unifications, and I think that we are going to see some more mergers in the next few weeks. This depends entirely on the polls, and if two leaders of two parties feel that if they merge or get together, they will get more seats than anybody else, they are likely to follow that direction.
Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Gilboa. We've come to the end of our half hour, but there is one more question in the queue. Do you have time to take that?
Yes, I have time.
Okay, fine. Then we'll go to the last question. Bonnie, could you please inform the caller how to call in?
Yes. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear your line is unmuted.
This is David Kudish in Aspen. I was in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem during a pretty stormy period during early November. While I was in Tel Aviv, there was the knifing of the rabbi on the temple, from the Temple Mount, but he was at the Begin Center. While I was in Jerusalem, there was the bus the Palestinian driving into the bus stop and killing a 3-month-old and injuring several
yeah.
people. And, of course, the collisions purposeful into the light rail train. And finally, I guess day after I left to come back to the States, there was this horrible massacre of a Druze security man and four rabbis davening the morning prayers. It did not make a blip in my reading anywhere in Europe or the United States. I find this horrific. And at the same time, Europe is saying they recognize or they're taking Hamas off the list of terrorist states. What's going on?
Well, you have to ask our friends in Europe. I think that first I want to say that the coverage of Israel and the Middle East in the European media is terrible. I think it is becoming highly distorted, or distorted also in the United States. I can't believe what I see being published even in the New York Times in recent weeks. And in communication, journalism are my fields, and it's hard to believe how much distortion can be found in those reports. About European policy and behavior, I think that I mentioned that earlier. I think that it is outrageous, obviously, what they are doing. I think that I think they live in the past. They still think. I had the opportunity to visit the EU headquarters in Brussels just a few months ago, and I couldn't believe what I heard there. They still believe that resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will make the Middle East the Garden of Eden. They still think that this is the number one destabilizing force in the Middle East, ignoring the events of the so-called Arab Spring, which became a Muslim Islamic winter, ignoring the Islamic State horrible atrocities in Iraq and Syria. So they still live in the past. And I think we are not doing enough to educate them about the real problems in the Middle East, and I'm not optimistic about it. I think that it's going to be very difficult to get them to understand what is going on here, except that perhaps when those crazy lunatics will be returning from Iraq and Syria to Europe, and we don't know how many Europeans are now fighting on the side of the Islamic State. Thousands of people. When they come back and perhaps begin and conduct violence and terrorism in European states, maybe they will wake up and change their policy. Until then, we have an uphill battle against them.
Thank you, Professor Gilboa, for your sobering comments on difficult times. And we also want to thank you for giving us insight into the complicated upcoming Israeli elections. And the Middle East Forum wants to extend its thanks to our participants and to Professor Gilboa. This ends our conference call.